Hello, this is Dr. Laura Hannes-Webb of VisionarySoul.com, author of The Gift of ADHD and Listening to Depression for the Sweet Spot program. Tune in weekly to find where your passion meets your purpose. This show is committed to helping you find, embrace, and live in your sweet spot. You can find us online at iTunes, at SweetSpotPodcast.com, at PsychJourneyPodcast.com, among many other places. And today, I'm very excited to be speaking with author Mark Lesser about his new book called Less, Accomplishing More by Doing Less. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, when I read the title of your book, it sounds almost too good to be true. How do we do that?
Well, yes, that's the that is definitely people's first first response. So, I think there's a few different very concrete examples that come to mind that I think are a useful place to start. One example I think is that of the person who is a martial artist. So if you picture someone, a man or a woman, standing at the center of many different people coming his or her way, wanting to attack him or distract him or interact in some way, and this person is just kind of relaxed, fluid, and just responding to each thing, each person that comes her way, without any extra effort at all. There's no extra thinking. There's no whining. There's no complaining. There's no busyness involved at all. So that's one image, and the other image, which I think is also really powerful, is that of the, and you may have heard this image before, but I think it works well. It's like the carpenter who doesn't have time to stop and sharpen his or her tools. So again, if you too busy, too much to do, right? We hear this all the time from so many people. I'm just too busy, but we're like that carpenter who doesn't have the time to stop and sharpen the tools, and then cutting wood or doing work with sharpened tools is a very concrete, I think, image of accomplishing more with less effort. And in this case, we are the tools. How can we sharpen ourselves? How can we work without doing anything extra?
Wow. And so what are some of the tools? You talk about several in the book. And I guess one of the main ones you talk about is mindfulness as a tool to sharpen our own self.
Yeah, well, I think and I think in a way the book is meant to be transformative, though it's filled with tools and practices that are not they're not easy, they're not gimmicky, they're really ways that are meant to help someone become more aware, more present, and certainly mindfulness, being developing awareness of our own blind spots, awareness of what we do that's extra. Awareness of how we don't show up to be present for our own lives and for relationships, and then I talk about in the book these kind of five key areas of which to pay attention to doing less in. Those areas are fear, assumptions, distractions, resistance, and busyness, and so. I think to have practices in our lives and tools within each of those five areas. And I think and fear, no mistake that fear is the first one.
Yeah.
That I think and it's that fear I think that makes it challenging to take to. I mean, it's easy to say it's very easy to say mindfulness practice or awareness practice. But this gig of being a human being is not so simple.
Yeah, it was funny because when I read through this list, I thought because a lot of times you read lists and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm like, okay, so if I could somehow solve this problem of fear, you know, it's just, it's like, that seems like that itself would be some kind of enlightenment.
Yeah, it's huge. I think it's one of the things I notice in my coaching practice and in the workshops I do, that people carry around, you know, we all carry around lots and lots of fears, and that it's okay. There's nothing, in fact, you know, as I say in the book, fear keeps us alive. It's a response that's, you know, part of our it's part of our reptilian brain, you know, this being able to be afraid when there's danger. The problem is that we become afraid of so many things that are not really dangerous, that keep us from having real conversations, that keep us from actually meeting people, that keep us from taking risks and chances and putting ourselves out there, that we get caught in old habits and old assumptions.
Right, and it's easy when you talk about the importance of kind of sharpening our tools, that it seems like worry and fear would be things that would, I mean, you could consume your entire life, let alone, you know, in terms of, you talk about accomplishing more by doing less. If we could do less worrying, it's easy to see how maybe there's some truth to what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you know, someone was just describing to me that their, this is a coaching client who was telling me that her sister has decided that, that relationships are not worth it, you know, and that she'd rather be alone, lonely, unhappy, because there's too much pain in being in relationship. And I mean, this is kind of what the epitome of someone living in fear.
Yeah.
This fear of being hurt. And of course we, you know, relationships are not easy, and being hurt is part of relationships, but having that kind of fear rule your life, or the fear of going for the kind of work that you really love, because you fear failure, or fear not having enough money, or fear we all have those fears, but it starts, I think, with acknowledging them and seeing how these fears live in our bodies, and not letting them rule us.
Not letting them drive the bus, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, one of the it's funny. I don't know if this is a practice that's in the, and I think this may be in the book, of this practice of kind of inviting your fears to tea. You know, to actually, it's useful, I think, to even name them, see them, become friends with them. It's not about, it's not about, I don't think we ever, lose them completely. And again, as I said, they're somewhat healthy, but it's how we move in a place where we're not being ruled by what we're afraid of.
Wow. And the other compelling part of your book is your own personal journey, and it's just for our listeners, if you could talk a little bit about, not only are you a Zen teacher, but you also have an MBA, and you travel widely in the business world. How do you integrate those two worlds, and what do they have to teach each other?
Yeah, I love being in those two worlds, you know, and it's interesting, even looking at what my day is like, you know, I go from coaching and teaching classes at Google, and working in the high-tech world, and I work in nonprofits, and I'm also a Zen teacher, and I was a resident of the San Francisco Zen Center for 10 years, and I have an MBA degree from New York University, and to me, these things, if I have an image, you know, if on one side is the image of kind of contemplative practice, or the image of an artist, or the image of someone working, you know, from their heart, and on the other side is the the image of someone who's a business person, or just getting things done and solving problems and accomplishing things, I think we tend to think of these as kind of two separate parts of our brains, or two separate ways of being in the world. And a huge aha moment that I had, this was about many years ago when I was living in a Zen monastery. I was director of Tassajara Zen Mountain Center, and I woke up one morning and got that I was running a business, that I was responsible for $1 million budget, that I was solving problems, I was running a staff, and that my meditation practice, my contemplative practice, was not only getting in the way of managing and solving problems and being creative, but it was completely integrated and an important part of that. And that that I really think that in a way that to me is what I would call full integration, or even aiming towards real, I think aiming towards real wisdom. And I think this is the only hope that our planet has, we can talk about this on a planetary level, and we can talk about it on an individual level or a team level or organizational level. But this this importance of not living, it's not living dualistically, it's not just about success and money and power, and it's also not just about contemplation and awareness. It's how we can integrate what looks like these two separate worlds.
Right, and it seems like you hinted a little bit when you said you realized that your meditation was not at all a distraction from you running a business, but was actually increasing your effectiveness. You talk about that there are certain routines that will kind of help you fulfill this promise of accomplishing more by doing less. And can you talk a little bit about what those routines are that you recommend and how they help us?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that as I was writing about this topic of accomplishing more by doing less, that routines came up as an important aspect, because in a way, almost by definition, a routine is something that we do that doesn't require any effort. Once we establish, for most people, many people can relate to, the routine of brushing one's teeth. It's like you don't even think about it, and your teeth get cleaned, every morning or every evening, and or flossing or both. That these are routines that keep our bodies healthy. And one of the basic routines that I recommend is, that having a daily meditation practice, I completely understand, because I've taught meditation to so many people in so many different contexts. I found that comparing it to brushing your teeth can be useful, that if you can approach it that is just something that you do when you get up, and even connecting it with brushing your teeth. Right after you brush your teeth, go sit for 20 or 30 minutes, and there's nothing fancy or mysterious about it. It's just having a small amount of time each day when you can just appreciating being alive. Mm-hmm. And I think this is huge. That so many of us are too busy to just appreciate being alive, and how, I think it's in one of the Tibetan traditions. I love this story in the Tibetan tradition, just the fact that we are born as a human being is considered the complete accomplishment there's nothing more. That's needed in terms of being a successful person.
Wow, that's amazing perspective.
it's funny how we completely disregard that and think, what I find is that no matter how successful people are, there's always someone more successful. There's always something missing.
Yeah.
Once we get into that state of mind. So again, I love the routines of having a clear vision of what success looks like, right? So I'm not, I'm, I, I'm not, in some way, it's wonderful to have both kinds of routines in your life, the routine of just appreciating being alive,
mm-hmm.
and the routine of having of looking at what it is you want to actually accomplish today.
Wow.
And imagine having both of those kinds of routines, and I think the routine of it's great to have a routine of being kind and generous with yourself as you attempt to practice in both of those realms.
Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of it, is kind of this being gentle with yourself and generous with yourself, and kind of giving yourself permission. I mean, it seems like in some ways behind doing less is this giving yourself permission to slow down.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think if that thought and taking that breath and realizing I'm alive and appreciating here I am. I'm alive. I'm a human being. I have this breath and this body, and that in this moment, anything is possible. And then get back to work. You know, what's next? What do I do next? But then coming back, having some routine, and it might be that I often recommend that it's a routine that you can establish that at the beginning of your day when you come in as you begin work. That you have a routine of, you know, just taking a breath and appreciating being alive. Just as for many people, the following routine can be the routine of looking over your projects and your dashboard of things that you need to get done. But that on there be remembering to breathe, remembering to appreciate being alive, and you know, there can be a routine of noticing what am I doing that's extra, and to be aware of what I'm doing that's extra, and to do less of those things.
Yeah, that sounds like important advice, to keep asking yourself, well, what am I doing that's extra?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like in order to get at that idea of what's extra, you know, one of the stories that kind of comes up throughout the book is that someone told you, you know, there's only really three things you have to learn, and one of them is sort of a mindfulness, and then the second one is that all you have to do is sing your song, and then the third thing is to figure out what that song is.
Right. Yeah. A teacher of mine that when I was living at the Zen Center, a Yurok Indian teacher named Harry Robertson, right, he said the most important, the first thing, not the most important thing, is to learn to stop the busyness in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is to find your song, is to discover, you know, what's really meaningful, what's really important to you. And then the third is to actually do it, is to move your life in that direction. And again, this is it sounds easy and straightforward, and yet not so easy. And something I think is something we need to do over and over again at different stages in our life. I think we might do that and go through that when we're in our late teens or 20s, and I think it's a very different experience to do it when we're in our 30s, and then different, you know, 40s, and different as we age and get older. It's not the kind of thing that I think anyone does once and forget about. And even the first one of stopping the busyness in your mind, I mean, the world keeps changing, and there's the information flow and the tools for tracking information flow can be really daunting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how we can you know, mindfully surf the internet, you know, or mindfully drive from, you know, from one place to another, or mindfully have a life where we are, you know, going from taking kids to school to taking classes to having to earn a living.
Right.
I mean, this is um, This is all real, important, challenging stuff. And again, in the midst of all of those, of solving real problems, getting things done, and remembering to just appreciate being alive.
Wow. Well, that's a great place to end. Thank you so much, Mark. Can you tell our listeners the title of your book, where they can find it?
Sure.
And if you have a website?
Yes. The title of my book is Less, Accomplishing More by Doing Less. In an ideal world, you'd find it at your neighborhood bookstore, and I think that's true in many cases. Also at the chains and online at Amazon. I actually have two websites. My blog is called doingless.net, and my kind of business website is called zbaassociates.com. It's my coaching and consulting company.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And what kind of things will people learn about at your blog?
On my blog, they can read a lot of the kinds of things that I'm, you know, thinking about. From I blogged the other day about happiness, and about, I do, you know, in a way, it's I write about these different kinds of meditation and mindfulness practices to how to grow and how to start and grow a business and everything in between.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been an honor.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.